Welcome everybody to today's member prospect call. We have two great members of ACA sharing their knowledge with us today. We've got Jeff Augustine and Bill Starnes. I didn't ask you guys who would like to start, but Bill, would you like to start?
Sure, why not? Unless Jeff has already done these, then I can listen to him and then I'll know what to do. I think you're asking me just to describe where I came from and how I ended up with ACA?
Yes, and why you stay.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. So, let's see. About 12 years ago, I started working as an hourly, fee-only NAPFA member. I worked with another. I had a boss, and I was an employee of his firm. And he was my mentor, and I learned all about financial planning. But he went to retire and to sell his business to me. Of course, he thought it was worth millions, and I thought he'd have to pay me to take it. So we're a little far apart on price. So I left to go on my own. Naturally, I was terrified because, let's see, with a few hourly clients, I really felt like I didn't have any clients because there was no guaranteed income stream. So I needed some support, and I got that one through I formed a partnership with another NAPFA member. But far more importantly is I joined ACA at that time. So that was after about 4 years of starting financial planning. I joined ACA because I wanted to convert the few hourly clients I had when I went out on my own. I wanted to convert them to a retainer model. And I wanted that because I wanted a relationship, I wanted an ongoing income stream, and I wanted to know who my clients were. And with an hourly client base, I felt I didn't have any of that. So I also wanted to work with people who were like-minded, meaning people who wanted to provide comprehensive, ongoing financial planning as fee-only fiduciaries to their clients. And I got all of that, not through any other group, but through ACA. Because to me, ACA is like a subset of NAPFA, of people who are really committed to comprehensive planning. So that's why I joined, and because of all the support I got, and because I was taught how to charge appropriately and enough, I was able to convert about 22 clients from hourly who immediately signed up for the retainer, and I haven't looked back. So that's why I joined. Now, why would I stay? I mean, I have a successful practice, and I'm very happy, and things have unfolded nicely. But I stay because I'm surrounded with like-minded people who share everything that they're doing and allow me to use what they're doing. So I have this great source of information and people who think similarly about how to practice. So it provides a wealth of tools through the intranet, the ACA intranet, and through other people, tools, advice, and that I've converted and I pick and choose and I use in my own practice. That saves me a tremendous amount of time, effort, and energy from having to recreate the wheel again. So that's the primary reason I stay.
Thank you, Bill. Jeff?
It's been seven or eight years since I joined, late 2003.
All right, Steve. How many clients do you have now?
I have 45 full retainer clients and about 18 investment-only clients. And then I do about 15 projects a year. So those are the three services I provide, either a standalone project, investment-only, or full-service retainer. Now, full-service retainer is about 85% of all of the work and income that I do. So it is my core service offering.
Okay. And Jeff, would you like to tell everyone how you used to be on the dark side?
I don't know how dark that side was, but I started in the business. Let me just back up to most recent and rewind. I've been an ACA member for, I was in the January 2009 class. So, yeah, it was September 08. So it's 2 years that I've been a member of ACA. About a year ago, July, is when the announcements first went out. And I started from scratch. I had no clients, had no succeeding business. I didn't buy a business, and so I was starting from zero as a moderate career changer, and I'll describe my background in a second so you'll understand why it was a moderate career change as opposed to a very, very significant one. Today I have three full retainer clients, and I've done a couple of projects. The good news for me is that I happened to run into some very significant relationships right out of the gate. I'm covered beyond covering expenses at this point, and I am in a separate office in an executive office center with very nice office space, the center covers and provides, you know, copier and receptionist, internet service, phone service, and all that sort of thing. So I don't worry about any of that. I've outsourced it all. So that's somewhat of a different expense model than you might want starting out if you want to, and you think you will be successful working from a home office. You can also do a virtual office where you come in and use office space at a facility like mine. But it only costs you $250 a month plus whatever number of hours you need for the conference room. I came from the investment management business, so I'm very used to a fee-only model. I worked at Putnam Investments for 7 years on a team that managed $18 billion in municipal bond assets. And then prior to that, I was 10 years at predecessor to Columbia Management, where I managed, I had line responsibility for $3.5 billion of funds as an investment manager. And I was the lead portfolio manager on a $700 million worth of investments, both closed-end and open-end tax-exempt bond funds. Got my start in the business on the floor of the Chicago Board Options Exchange. After moving to Boston to stay 2 or 3 years, 25 years ago, I got my CFA. I sat for the CFP exam in 07, went through the process of once leaving Putnam Investments, wanting to work for individuals and families and really help people directly as opposed to working in a very large 600-person investment organization and having the question be, you know, what have you done for me today versus performance relative to benchmark. Started down the process with the idea that I would take this CFA and 30 years of investment management experience across fixed income as well as equity, and just hang out with, you know, a private wealth management firm in Boston. No traction was had there. Got tired of waiting and said, well, what would be the next step? And I decided that after attending the NAPFA Regional Conference in Hartford, Connecticut in October of 07, that I did want to move forward with hanging out the shingle, went to the basic training track, and one of the people presenting the case study was Dana Levitt. And Dana is an ACA advisor, and I thought, she has the best ideas, and she had the greatest insights and things that I thought were of great practical value, even though I came from like what many would say was a highly quantitative background in equity and fixed income investments. And it just really appealed to me. The other thing that appealed to me was the hourly model did not at all appeal to me. If you are used to an AUM-type framework, it's a renewable and ongoing structure for your business. And the ACA model in terms of how that's done appealed to me. I also wanted a business model. Bill used the term, don't want to reinvent the wheel. I did not want to take 3 years to figure out how to get this done effectively. And the idea that there's a framework for each appointment, that there's an outline for this whole process, yet you have a freedom to, within, you know, NAPFA and ACA guidelines, pursue this business in a way that makes sense for you, not only how many hours per day you want to put in, how many weeks per year you want to put in, but how to conduct each of the appointments with some ideas about how to get that started, was critical for me. So that's why I joined and where I came from. Why do I stay? I felt that one of the other things about why I joined is also why I stay. Nobody can know everything. You know, I've been a CFA and for 20 years, and I've been in large investment organizations for, you know, probably 25 years. And the thing is, you can't, even in investments, know it all. How could I know it all about, you know, new developments in trust and estate? Where's the best solo 401k? What do I do about immediate annuities for clients? Having the discussion forum, having a mentor, having people who are from insurance backgrounds, like Amy's husband Greg, Chris Curran, like other people, in John Shearer in our organization. You know, John worked for Northwestern Mutual. Is there anything he doesn't know about insurance? Probably not. But in any case, there are people that you can talk to, as well as people who are formerly, you know, IRS agents, as well as people who are CPAs, enrolled agents, that sort of thing, you know, for your tax work. So I stay because I feel like I continue to need ongoing support. And the discussion forum can be a great resource also. So when people ask me about, are you a solo practitioner? And I say, yes, I am. But, you know, I'm kind of like the Verizon guy. You see me, but there's 150, 200 people behind me. So I have a rich depth and breadth of resources that I can lean on. And that greatly increased my confidence as I was moving forward with my practice. And, you know, the types of things and the breadth of knowledge and the creativity is what was able to allow me to say to my, you know, my first and largest client, gee, we've covered your fee, your first year fee, we've covered five times with tax savings and the savings on a refi that I was instrumental in getting done for him and his family. So those are the reasons why I stay. We just came back from our conference in Phoenix, and I couldn't be more excited and pumped up about an organization that continues to strive to be vital to its membership going forward. The directors of the organization, the trustees, the group that kind of pulls things together and tries to survey the membership, is passionate about ensuring that what the organization provides is what the membership wants and needs, and it's what they say they need and want. So that sort of stuff, I think, is very helpful. I can tell you, as a CFA, I head up the program committee for the private wealth management group for the Boston Security Analyst Society, which is the local CFA group here in Boston. And I can tell you, there are 5,200 members of the Boston Security Analyst Society. And if we had 60 or 70 people at a lunch event, we would say that was a good event. So clearly, that's a group that I'm also involved with. But the key there is to make that group more relevant. Alternatively, at the annual conference, we have, for Cambridge advisors, we probably have, you know, two-thirds of the membership attend, which is unbelievable. And the participation, activity, the skin in the game that everybody has on an ongoing basis is another reason why I stay, to see people like, you know, Bill, who presented, be up there and sharing all kinds of ideas, and people who have been doing this for 15 years with Cambridge Advisors standing up, sharing their ideas, their insights, how they get the appointments done. and being willing to share everything. These are the here's the three-ring binder I use. I'll put it up on the internet so that you can download the pages and the headers and create a binder like that to give to your clients so that they can put the papers from each appointment in that. I'm going to stop in a second, but those things are the types of things that, for me, in early days in my practice, are critical to my success, critical to successful practice management, critical to delivering value way above cost for my clients. And I'm confident that the referrals will continue to grow over time, because these people are extremely happy with the type of service that I'm providing. And I'm certain that the 45 full retainer clients that that Bill has are in the same camp, and that's why he's got 45 full retainer clients, because they can call anytime. And I think that also is critical, a critical advantage to the way we do things. I will say one last story. I've talked yesterday with a guy who has a huge practice, and by that I mean he's a NAPFA member with 400 million under management. He does an AUM plus a retainer kind of strategy, and he talked with me yesterday about, you know, conceptually, I don't disclose anything about the proprietary framework we use here, but conceptually he wanted to talk about how a retainer sort of situation could work. So I'm telling you, I think this is just a great way to do business. It's a great group. It's going to be hard work, but I think it's something that you can be very proud of as you move forward with it. Patience and persistence are important, but the cool thing is, in my mind, I had people to talk to, a mentor, other so to speak, product specialists that I can lean on in areas where I didn't have strength, but where they had expertise that they were more than willing to share. And I will stop there, Amy. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. That was great. All right, I'd like to open it up to Q&A. If you have muted your phones, don't forget to press star 6 to unmute them. I know there's got to be a few questions out there. Anyone?
This is Joe here. Thanks for the info. This has been very helpful. I just kind of started looking into this. I had started looking into this a couple months ago and had stumbled upon, the Garrett Network first, and, kind of similar to some of the comments you guys are having, the hourly model didn't overly appeal to me. The philosophy did. But I guess what I'd be interested in is on your, on the model of doing the retainer basis, how hard is it to get, client, because and I don't maybe fully understand how you end up calculating the fee, but it sounds like it's kind of based on somewhat on their net worth, income, complexity. How do you get them comfortable when you're bringing somebody in initially, to divulge that kind of information, that it's, their fee is going to be based on their net worth, when maybe you have some clients that aren't necessarily. And I'm an attorney now, and it's not always easy to get clients to share that kind of information willingly off the bat to get the relationship going.
Yeah, Joe, that's a great question. This is Jeff. I think Bill's got a lot more experience with that, but I can tell you a couple things that in very early days I've found, and that is that, first off, I have to recognize, and, early on, and everybody says this, early on, the requirement for a client feels like all they need to do is be able to fog a mirror. And the fact is, there are lots of people out there, but only a few of them are going to be great clients for you. But that group, that smaller percentage, is going to fall over themselves to get to you, and your challenge is to get in front of those people, because they have like-minded friends. When I ask for, in fact, what I do is I send out an email to prospective clients who call me or contact me. And in that email, I request all that data, and I just make sure that I state in that email that that information is covered by my privacy statement, which is attached to the email, so that any information they share with me, even though they're not engaged as a client, is already covered by the privacy statement. I tell you what's happened. I've had one client state it specifically and another client state it kind of inferred. When I told a recent client what the retainer fee was, reflexively, without hesitation, without a nanosecond passing, she snapped her head and looked at me and said, "That's not enough." And the reason why she said that is she had already gone to a bank, and the bank wanted to charge her almost double what I was going to charge, and I was going to provide far higher services. So I think it's easy when you're starting out, and I still have to deal with it a little bit myself. It's easy to be concerned about asking for that information. And some clients won't want to share that. And what you can do is you can ask them to bring it to the appointment. I would just have a conversation with them about that. If push came to shove, you could have them, you know, bring it. But then you really have to be on your feet and good at reviewing that information on the fly without having seen it before. I'm not that good yet. So I like to receive it in advance, and I tell clients that I will schedule a meeting within, you know, let's say 2 weeks after the time I received that information from you. I had one individual turn it around in 48 hours, and it was attached in PDFs to an email sent to me immediately. Other folks had no problem. They dropped things off. I've got a little Fujitsu scanner. I scan the stuff in, give them the originals back, and then at the meeting and review the information. So, and finally, in terms of the fee calculator, there is, when you join, there is a fee calculator, in fact. So it's a matter of data entry, and the fee is generated for you. And you can make adjustments to that fee calculator consistent with how you want to build your business. Bill, do you want to add to that?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you how I do it, and I think this helps with any resistance, because I've received very little resistance, and that's because, well, they know they're going to see a financial advisor. But I don't ask for any of the information up front. I send them a letter and some forms, and I tell them to simply bring those items with them to the first meeting. And when they arrive for that meet, so they don't have to send their personal information through the mail or to someone they haven't met yet. So maybe that helps. I don't really know, because that's the only way I've ever done it. So then they show up at the meeting, and by the end of the meeting, we've established enough trust that generally they're able to share everything with me. Also, the first thing I do go over with them is my privacy notice. Now, many times they'll cross out social security numbers and things like that, and I say that's no problem at all. You know, I can still review all of your materials and give you your quote and proceed forward. But by the end of the meeting, you know, they're comfortable enough to just hand everything over. So I haven't found much of a problem there. Okay.
What about, I guess, and those answers were very helpful. Do you guys have a sense of, you know, are people, you're obviously finding people are pretty accepting of the retainer model as opposed to whatever else is out there? I mean, do you have people that balk at that fee calculation as opposed to what the other models are?
For myself, I do it slightly differently. I'm surrounded in my area by engineers and scientists. They're not generally ones who want to immediately enter into an engagement. where they sign a contract and hand it all over. So the way I've broken it down a little bit, where I do a project first, I answer, many Cambridge advisors do kind of this, I forget what they call it, but a mini type of plan. I basically charge them $4,000 and I do a plan. I answer all of their burning questions. And then if I like them and they like me, then we'll start the retainer. So that kind of gets through a little bit of the resistance where, okay, I'm going to pay $10,000 up front. I don't know this guy yet from Adam, and I'm an engineer, and I don't like the idea of even relinquishing any control. So that's one way I've had to deal with that. But that's specific to my particular area.
This is Mary Carroll in Baltimore, Maryland. Could I ask a question just adding on to that? I wasn't really clear. When you do the project for them, so you do the $4,000 plan up front, mm-hmm. and then you introduce the retainer, does the $4,000 come off the first-year retainer fee? Is that the
no.
way you work that?
No, I just charge, and $4,000 is an average.
Mm-hmm.
I charge the plan fee. We have two meetings,
mm-hmm.
and then they can, if they want to, and if I want them, they can sign up for the retainer. They pay the retainer fee in addition to the $4,000.
Okay.
But the retainer fee is based upon the Cambridge second year renewal
mm-hmm.
fee.
Okay.
So it still ends up costing them the same, but I've just broken it in half, basically.
Okay.
And that way, many of these engineers, that way I can be paid fairly, and they can go on their way. And for many people who do want a retainer, which I personally think is the very best way to receive financial advice, they stay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I remember when I first joined Cambridge, I thought, wow, this costs money. I'm a little nervous about this. I remember when I returned, within the first 2 months, I had enough new client appointments where I was able to charge fees so much more, like $2,000 more than I was charging, thanks to Cambridge teaching me how to talk about value that they'd be receiving, that I paid for the cost of this class after my first, like, three new client appointments. I couldn't believe it. And just to tack on to why I'm still here and coming back to fees, Jeff talked about the relationships you develop with ACA members, and it's not just their knowledge. It's how that knowledge converts to value to clients. And I'll give a quick story. Jeff mentioned John Shear, who knows a lot about insurance. I don't know anything about insurance. And I had a client who was, and I had recommended, he is purchasing $1 million cash value whole life insurance policy. Now, you know, I'm not going to get into a debate about should he or shouldn't he, because that's what he was doing. He was doing it through a local guy. And I talked to John, and John was able to help me have that client purchase the almost exact same policy from the same company, but because he knew a guy who worked on volume, lowered his commission, and blended the insurance, I saved my client, it was about $16,000 on the commission. And that $16,000 went right into the cash value. That client, he pays me every year like $6,000 or $7,000. I barely even see him anymore. I've been trying to get him to, you know, come in. He's like, Bill, I'll never fire you. I don't care if I don't talk to you or not. I just, you know, he's just sold. And it's because of these relationships in Cambridge where, boy, I can pick up the phone and call John. And someone like Jeff has obviously taken really good advantage of his membership by, you know, building those relationships with other ACA members, because it translates into value, which translates into a stronger business and a far more profitable business. So I'm excited for all of you.
Well, me too. And I could add, too, that kind of to Joe's question and Mary Carol yours as well, is that If I do a project, the projects I've done for people, and I've just done a few, tend to be a little bit smaller. But what I do offer for them is that any of the project, that the project fee can go to the first year retainer. So I would set up a first year retainer structure, and it typically is higher than the second year, just because we do a lot of the blocking and tackling in year one, and may have many more appointments in the first year, and then fewer appointments in renewal years. But I think rather than, you know, the point, I think the big point here is a way to start is to do things that you're taught how to do in this process. A lot of people have said the biggest mistake I made was 2 years later realizing that, oh, that's why they told me this is what I was supposed to do. But as time goes on, or if you're an experienced planner coming into this business and you already have a great idea about how you would like to do it, you know, you can modify your approach. It's really a way that you could take the Cambridge outline and all the benefits and then kind of on this outline hang, you know, the little modifications or little nuances about things that you may have already found in practice if you're already quite experienced, as, you know, Bill was, and has, you know, some tremendous ideas about what works best in his area and what works best with his key client base of, you know, engineers and people who are highly technical and highly fluent in, you know, in math and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it is best in the beginning not to get too distracted with attempting to modify anything, because that would, out of the gate, be, I think, a mistake. And it starts to get distracting, and you start wasting your time on trying to modify something that's already just fine.
Yeah, it's not broken.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to monopolize this, Joe, again. Somebody cut me off if they got other questions. Do you have a sense of, you know, as an organization, kind of, you know, as you've gotten more members, I mean, is there a sense of, you know, how many clients, you know, on the retainer basis, is it kind of estimated to where you're kind of at full capacity and kind of a sustaining business model, kind of under the thought that you're probably always out there, you know, looking for, you know, new and better clients. But, I mean, is there a sense of kind of what the threshold is of what you, you know, how many retainer clients you need to hit to make it, you know, sustainable? I'm sure it's obviously dependent on if you get, you know, larger ones, it's less. But I guess if you guys could kind of talk about that. And from my perspective, you know, I'm an attorney. I'd be coming from, you know, I'm a corporate attorney. I've got, you know, some relevant experience. But basically coming from scratch with no book, you know, what's the thought process on what it actually takes to get this up and moving in terms of clients?
Well, again, speaking from limited experience, but, you know, kind of still in the trenches in terms of early days, I have a long way to go before I run out of capacity. I think what I've observed as, you know, more of a rookie than anything else relative to, you know, Bill's extensive experience is that people run businesses kind of in a number of different ways. One model is to remain a solo practitioner for those that don't want to have employees. Another kind of hybrid model is to take on virtual support, which, you know, who might be people who are in the business of providing virtual support, either administrative or paraplanner type support. So they might not even be on site, and they might have their own business, so you don't have to take them on as employees. And then the third model is that, yeah, we need employees. And so there are Cambridge practices that have, you know, that are, you know, large like Bill's and, you know, even larger with more staff and maybe 80 full retainer clients. You know, in terms of, you know, what you want to make and all that sort of thing, obviously it's a matter of saying, well, you know, how many clients at this rate do you need to get your gross, and, you know, have some idea about what your operating expenses are going to be, so you'll have a sense of what your pre-tax, you know, revenue will be for the business.
Yeah, so I this is Bill Starnes. So the one of the very first things I do is reflect a little bit on what you want your business to look like, and then do some modeling, cash flow modeling. And believe it or not, there's a wonderful tool on the ACA website that I happen to put up there on cash flow and profitability. And it's basically a five-year cash flow model where you're plugging in all the business drivers, meaning how many new clients will I be adding each year, what will be the average retainer fees, plugging in your expenses, and you're going to, you know, just backfill that model and create goals for yourself so that you can achieve the type of income that you need, because everyone's different. I mean, there are advisors in Cambridge who probably make $50,000 a year and ones who make $500,000 a year. And that is indeed part of the type of business that they want. Some want lifestyle practices, some don't. So I'd encourage you to decide what type of business do you want, and then using that some sort of business plan or a cash flow model like the one I put on the ACA website. And then also, if you can get your hands on, and you can always email me to get some, but get some benchmarking surveys. Because these benchmarking surveys show you what the typical solo advisor in his first 5 years is earning and what they're spending. So that'll also help you develop a reasonable set of expectations. Because some people expect to earn, you know, starting from scratch, over $100,000 in their second year. Well, you know, some those things are certainly possible, but you know, you want to look at kind of some of these benchmarks of what other either NAPFA firms or ACA firms are doing in their early years, and then set goals for yourself, and then start long-term goals for where you want to be, and then start backfilling year by year how many clients you need to add at what dollar amount, and you know, also plug in your estimated expenses. And the benchmarking survey helps you come up with a lot of these realistic goals. And a lot of the surveys break down the firms by firms that are the average firm, average solo guy, and then the ones who are doing it right. and I don't mean, that's not judgmental, doing it right from the benchmarking surveys perspective, the ones that are the most profitable.
Which one was just speaking? Was that Jeffrey or Bill?
That's Bill.
Oh, Bill. That's Mary Carol. I just want to email you for those, for reference on those surveys. Okay.
Yeah, Moss Adams and ACA both have done surveys every year, and if you participate in them, you get the surveys for free. And if you don't, I think they cost like $150.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I participate in all of these because I like having the free data. It also lets me know, it helps me set goals. Because if you've ever met a solo anybody, whether it's a mechanic or a printer or an advisor, you know, if they're not paying attention to what's happening out there, they fall behind. That's why I always like finding the mechanic who's been doing it for 60 years, because he's still charging, you know, $3 an hour or whatever. You know, they fall behind, and you don't want to fall behind. You want to stay very competitive.
This is Mary Carol again. Could you both comment on, I don't mean to be negative, but if you feel that there is something with ACA that is a weaker point, could you comment on what you think that is? And I do definitely hear all the positives, and I've talked to many people in ACA, and it is, it's real clear what the positives are. But if you were to express a desire to have something improved in the organization, what would it be? I guess that's a better way to put it.
I'm a bad guy to ask because it'll take me a while to come up with a good answer.
Bill,
so I'll defer that to Jeff for the moment.
Bill, I guess, this is Jeff. I would say that it's not it's not the negative. It's just the reality. And the reality is that if you build it, they will not come. And I don't mean to be brusque or abrasive. What I'm saying is just that your marketing plan, I have one thing that I am doing to get this business up and running and cash flowing. That's it. I'm not doing systems. I'm doing as little as I have to for compliance. So I'm not building a state-of-the-art compliance system. I'm not going out and buying, optimization frameworks that use resample deficiency to generate asset allocation models. You know, stop the madness. I am just focused, number one, on getting this business up and running and cash flowing, and I've done it. And now moving forward, I want to make it more profitable. And that's my primary focus. So for me, what that means is doing something that's difficult, which is, if you've read The E-Myth, I'm a technician. And as a technician, I have to take the technician hat off, become a business owner. And as a business owner, not to deny my technical skills, I have to make sure I have clients. So the reality is, Mary Carol, for me, what's difficult for me is to push myself into the local chamber of commerce to network, to push myself into local business associations, to push myself to be into local professional organizations where there are significant referral sources available, whether they be trust and estate attorneys, CPAs, other people who might be insurance professionals, people who are business valuation professionals, and things like that. And that takes me out of my comfort zone to get in, to just kind of be there in a room full of people that I don't know. So I would love it if Cambridge just, sent me 100 leads, and then I got another 100 from NAPFA. Well, I'm up on the NAPFA website. I'm up on the Cambridge website. I did all that blocking and tackling. But the reality is, we need clients, and the best way to get to grow a business is to make personal contact and to go to the people that you know. As you probably half of you already know all this. For me, I was a technician, and so there were other people that handled distribution and client contact. So if there was something that I would say can't really be changed, but something that nevertheless is difficult. And yeah, I guess in the perfect world, I would love Cambridge to send me 100 referrals. And the fact is, there's so many opportunities out there for people to get sidetracked by, the Series 7 broker-dealer community and the trust departments at banks and other, other things that they don't come to us. But I would say, again, I would say that's more a reality rather than a negative, because Cambridge does have a nice-looking website, and Cambridge, people do come to the ACA website and do contact advisors. And NAPFA, being up on the NAPFA site is a positive, and people do contact you. But I did a search of NAPFA members within 10 or 20 miles, and there are 75 for me.
Wow.
So, and I refer to them all as colleagues in the esteemed competition. But I do a lot different. There are also four or five Cambridge advisors in the area, which is excellent, actually, because, there's more than enough people to go around. I'm going on and on, Mary Carol, but I would say the most difficult thing is acquiring clients.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Carol, when I hear people, if someone said, I sometimes hear, like at the conference, boy, we can do even more. I'm always the one that scratches my chin and says, oh my gosh, how can Cambridge be doing more? Now, if you ask me the same question I'm a member of NAPFA. I'm a member of ACA. NAPFA is far larger, has far greater resources at its disposal in terms of money and staff. Yet if you ask me the question, what could NAPFA do to improve, I would talk for a while. You ask me a question, what can ACA do? My answer is always the same. Well, when I compare ACA against my other membership organizations, I'm absolutely blown away with what I'm provided from the organization relative to all the others. And I just say, how could they do even more? So that's why I said you're asking the wrong guy. Now, the only thing, you know, you want to be sure, sometimes people get oversold, you know, like, okay, me and Jeff are pretty enthusiastic. We really appreciate ACA, but that doesn't mean you should think you're going to walk in and every single thing you're shown or every calculator or every tool, that it's going to be perfect and perfect for you. Well, it's not meant to be that way. You know, you get to pick and choose. That's even better, what works for you. So that's the only thing I'd just be careful about, that, you know, you're going to walk in and everything's going to be, you know, fitting you perfectly. No. But ACA as an organization, what they provide is absolutely astounding compared to other groups, including NAPFA. And I've been active on the NAPFA forum making these suggestions. It's not helping, but ACA, I don't have any suggestions because every day I open my eyes, like the new succession thing just came out, and I'm just like, oh, my God, now I'm getting all of this on a silver platter for my membership? It's almost like I can't believe it.
Great.
Right, and
thank
templates
you.
For the ADV and all the, you know, the quick start, 3-month quick start list, and you know, support.
When I joined, I had just paid Tom Giacchetti, who's an SEC attorney. I had just paid him probably
top guy in the country too.
Yeah, so I paid him only $3,000.
Well done.
Then I joined ACA a month later, and they pretty much gave me a lot of the same contracts and compliance stuff, which was included in my fee.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm shooting myself saying, why did I spend all this money on, you know, these other guys? When ACA, whether it was, we got something from ProTracker, I think it was a compliance something. You know, we just got a lot of tools that I otherwise, starting out, would have had to been paying for, which would have added up to a lot more than my ACA first year fee. So I'm done.
Great. Thank you.
Kind of following up on Jeff's point about, you know, the tough part of getting clients, which, you know, in this industry is obviously the crux of it on whether you're going to be successful or not. Is there, does the organization have any kind of consensus or what's the approach on, especially for, you know, maybe somebody starting from scratch? You know, obviously, we'd all like to, you know, go network and set up a referral base, you know, do some seminars or whatever. I mean, is that the general philosophy? Or, I mean, the other options, obviously, just, you know, I don't know, cold calls makes me cringe, kind of word. But, I mean, to what extent, you know, is the philosophy on how to actually go out and generate a client base from scratch? What's the... the philosophy or the guidance that ACA provides in that sense. And obviously you're going to have to go out and sell yourself and find the clients, and it's on you to do it. But in terms of approach or, you know, guidance, what's for somebody starting out, kind of what's the thought process, I guess?
Well, this is Jeff. Rather than describing the thought process per se, what I tell you is, as a part of the training, you receive a complete marketing guide, along with, you know, consistent with the idea that, you know, you or at least I did, among the reasons for joining Cambridge was ACA, joining ACA meant that I didn't have to reinvent the wheel. And ACA also doesn't seek to reinvent the wheel, but use best practices from others. So there's a well-known book that we use called Get Clients Now is one process that you can be aware of. And I think a couple of things are clear. You have to change your mindset about what selling is, in terms of just informing people about your business and your framework and, you know, how you do things. So it's about getting in front of people and understanding what their problems are and helping them make great decisions about, you know, moving forward with the things that they want to do in their life. One of the first things we learn about, too, is letting clients tell us what their problems are. Frequently, clients will pre-qualify themselves by just you listening to what they think the issue is or what's bugged them or what their worries are or what their past experiences might have been and what are they concerned about in terms of, you know, funding things in the future, and that sort of stuff. Do they feel like their situation's out of control? And, you know, let them tell you. You know, so that's kind of the conversation about, you know, when you get, you know, when you get an opportunity to talk with people. But there is a there is an extensive part of the program that deals with marketing and, you know, what you need to do in terms of establishing goals about how you get information out to people and what the most effective ways of connecting with others are. And so the element of that that I focused on, just to give you the quick answer for me, is that I've been in Boston for 20 years in investment management. So I've talked with other investment management colleagues, and two of the clients that I'm working with right now are former colleagues in from one of the firms I worked with. So they're actually investment professionals. In fact, one of them is a PhD in economics and finance. He's not working with me because I know more than him. He's working with me because he has no time, and he trusts me. He knows me, and we've known one another for 12 years. So if he gets hit by a bus, he wants a backstop so that his family's cared for. And that was his concern. So it's not about can you generate an excess return over the S&P 500 with similar risk. It's not about that. It's about can you help me with my problem. So that's a couple of comments about it, but just to let you know, there's extensive work about marketing, but it's work that you have to do. You can be taught or told, or you can read about it, but the fact of the matter is you have to do it. And that's true whether you come with, you know, Cambridge or Garrett, or, you know, you want to just hang out your, you know, hang out your shingle and go with NAPFA basic training and run with it from there.
But the difference is with ACA, you get a lot of support. You still have to do it yourself, but there are recordings, marketing recordings on the ACA website. There are presentations, so like audio you can download and listen to, shared marketing information. They give referrals if you need, you know, a more effective marketing campaign. You know, Cambridge will say, these are many people have worked with other Cambridge advisors. You would check them out if that's the direction you want to go. There's a newsletter template that's already, not just a template, the articles too. And you can add your own articles to it. So there's a wealth of support and resources. That doesn't mean you don't have to do anything, but you get a lot of support through the ACA successful marketing binder, or they have a whole guide to all of the marketing materials on one piece of paper. So you know what are all the things that ACA provides in terms of marketing and where do I find them all?
May I sneak in one more question? Mary Carol?
Absolutely.
Okay. Both of you have been in this for a bit, and I have a long background in building client businesses in investments, but I've been out of it for a few years. And given the events that have taken place in the last couple years, if you were starting today, what would you say would be, would you say there's a greater challenge now? And if so, what would that be?
This is Bill. Now versus when?
Now versus 4 years ago, even.
for me, the environment for building new clients and adding new clients in 2008 and 2009 was tough. So if I were you, I'd say to myself, I'm sure I'm glad I'm starting now rather than then. And that you asked why. There are only two things I can find. One is not for referrals have significantly declined for me. When I started with ACA, I was getting 25 NAPFA referrals who signed up a year, and now it's 2 to 5. So that's a change. And the second is just that, you know, as of several years ago, people were just like deer in the headlights. They were too scared to do anything. But in 2010, things have picked up dramatically with new clients and people interested in finding an advisor. So I think it's right now it's a pretty good time. It's not like it was when I started in 2003, but it's much better than 08 and 09.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, Mary Carol, I would say 09 was 09 was a little tough sledding. The good news was I also took a marketing strategy that just said I wanted to go out and talk to my talk to friends and colleagues, not with the idea that they become clients, but I wanted to tell them about what I was doing so that they could be effective referral sources to the extent they had colleagues, friends, family, whoever, who they thought could really use some help. So I wanted to take the pressure off the idea that they were being sold, because investment people especially are, feel that coming a mile away and immediately the wall goes up. I did get a little flurry of activity after tax time, so people were pretty focused around taxes, in my view, in my area. And then I got, after vacation, people kind of late August, early September, kind of, got some incoming activity, notwithstanding, persistence and ongoing work to reach out to people. What I'm hearing from people is that, whatever happened to them in 08 and 09, the do-it-yourselfers are now saying to themselves, I do not want to go through that again. Mm-hmm. And, I want to get some support, even if they think the problem is asset allocation. And certainly we can help them with that. And, you've had a lot of experience and background with that. There's other things that Bill and I have already talked about, ways that we can save them money as well, that mm-hmm. Will help them in a great way. But I would say the environment is better than it was, certainly in 09. Because I sent my announcements without in July of 09, and that's only 3 or 4 months off the lows, right? So that was... that was kind of challenging, but there was still a number of people who have needs who I've signed up.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other quick questions? All right. I want to thank our two hosts today, Jeff Augustine and Bill Starnes, for helping us on this call, and for all of the prospects that participated. If you have any other questions, please don't hesitate to call me or to shoot me a quick email. I'd be more than happy to answer them for you. And I guess I will wrap it up there. Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend. Enjoy Halloween.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You too,
thanks so much. Thanks to both of you. That's very helpful.
My pleasure. Yeah.